argument in Campbell versus DiSabatino. You ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Bob McDonald on behalf of the Campbell family. We're here, as the court knows, on an appeal from a summary judgment that was granted in favor of the defendants by Judge Cooch. I'd like to take the court back, give you a little factual history of how we get to where we're at your doorstep, and then raise the argument with you, if I might. In October of 2000, the plaintiffs took possession of a property at 107 Ballant Circle in Wilmington. Shortly after moving into that house, they detected a musty smell or a moldy smell. There's a lease between the parties, and this falls under the landlord-tenant code. The plaintiffs voiced a concern to the defendants. At some point after that concern was noticed to the defendants, the plaintiff went into the basement, began to look for this musty smell, located the whole house humidifier, which was connected to the heater, cracked over the cover. There was a blocked water line. There was corroded pallets and stagnant water. He removed the humidifier from the house.
When was that?
That would be on or about the first week in November of 2000, Your Honor. Once the humidifier was removed, the defendants were kind enough to send somebody around on November 29th to clean the ductwork. Unfortunately, the smell persisted, and the defendants took no other inspections or maintenance of the house. The plaintiffs continued to complain the musty smell was still there. They were having difficulty with that smell. They were beginning to develop some medical conditions. That was the small children were having asthma reaction, allergic reaction. They were sickly. Finally, the Campbells retained a professional laboratory service to examine the house. We know now that there was mold in the house. Based on their medical providers, the Campbells left the house and abandoned the leasehold.
When was that?
They would have left about 10 weeks after taking possession of the house. So by Christmas of 2000, they were gone, Your Honor. The Campbells were pro se up until about November of 2003 when counsel presently before you was retained and an amended complaint was filed. Within that complaint, there were allegations of negligence per se, ordinary negligence, and some punitive damages. Frankly, there were some contract damages, but I've abandoned those claims. I think they were resolved at the hearing with the Justice of the Peace Court. There was a stay in this litigation for a period of time, as the court may know.
So what is left, a simple negligence claim?
I would argue negligence per se, simple negligence, and the punitive damages, Your Honor. In August of 2006, a stay that had been in place was lifted and a scheduling order was entered. Now, the stay was in place because one of our experts, Dr. Johanning, was also an expert that was named in another litigation, and there was a dull bear argument going on. So out of some sense of economy, Judge Cooch thought it best, and we asked him to think it was best to stay the proceeding. In August 30,
you requested the stay.
We did. In August 30, 2006, Judge Cooch lifted the stay and entered a scheduling order. Part of that scheduling order required us, the plaintiffs, to publish reports on or before December 29, 2006, with respect to our experts. We identified a series of medical providers, Dr. Johanning being one. We identified our microbiologist and the laboratory who did the testing for us, and we identified a Mr. Lynn. Mr. Lynn, as the court may know from reading the associated cases, is a due diligence person. He testified in a couple other cases. In any case, I made the defendants aware of Mr. Lynn's presence and that we intended to call him. However, there was no expert report filed or received by me and filed with the defendants until after the scheduling order had expired. There was a motion to strike Mr. Lynn as my expert. There was argument held on that with Judge Cooch. And on December 22nd, 2006, the motion to exclude him was heard, and he was excluded. Frankly, I thought Mr. Lynn would have been instructive, maybe helpful to the jury, but he wasn't fatal to my claim. I didn't ask for re-argument. I didn't ask for, nor did I file a motion to enlarge the scheduling order. That followed its path down to finally there was a motion for summary judgment wherein the defendants argued that I need an expert as to the standard of care to survive this litigation. We had an argument with Judge Cooch. Judge Cooch found in favor of the defendant, and I'm here today. The question for us, frankly, is, at least I think the question for us is, whether or not a standard of care expert is actually going to be required for us to survive. And I believe we don't need an expert for a couple of reasons. And first off, we know that 25 Delaware Code 5303 applies to this, and that is that it creates a duty upon the landlord to provide a rental unit that doesn't endanger the health, welfare, or safety of the tenants. The landlord has an affirmative duty to inspect the subject property. In the cases that we named were Lemon and Northfleet, if you follow through with it. Two cases the justice heard as Superior Court judges, one being Hand, and it'll slip my mind, Justice Berger, I'm sorry, your case. You laid out a series of standards. First was that there had to be a code violation. In this case, the standard 25 or 5303 said that you had to have a duty to inspect, that you might be limited only to contract damages unless there was a negligence per se, ordinary negligence that could be brought. For negligence per se, the court concluded, and it's wound its way through Lemon and Northfleet and the cases that follow, that you have to have a secondary violation, another statute. For example, there's a case that deals with a fire escape. There had to be a violation of the city code or the county code regarding fire escapes for there to be negligence per se, and that seems to hold fairly true. However, negligence, ordinary negligence, remains. Now, it's the defendant's position that I needed an expert to come in and talk about what the standard of care was for a landlord and a property manager in the state of Delaware. I don't think that's the case. If you follow Judge Witham's case in Northfleet, he...
Well, can you back up a second?
Sure,
you said a while ago that negligence per se was in the case. Is it in or out?
I believe it's still in, Your Honor. I'd like to make that argument to the court. I think when the court wrote that decision, they were looking at some very finite situations. And in all the cases that the court was looking at that particular time in 1990 was, I had the code violation that says you have an implied duty of habitability to the tenant, and there had to be some other violation of some building code or safety code to carry the negligence per se.
But I don't see this raised on appeal.
I didn't raise it on appeal, Your Honor. But it's still in the case as far as I was concerned. But I believe negligence per se still survives this. The only issue raised on appeal was whether or not I needed an expert.
Well, maybe we better stick with that issue.
Okay, Your Honor, fine. If you look at Northfleet, and Northfleet seems to work its way through many of the cases, it says, and it's concluded, and I've not found any line of cases otherwise, that says a landlord and a property manager are not experts. We're told that you need an expert to contradict the conduct or evaluate the conduct of an expert. If defendants aren't experts, why do I need an expert to contradict what they did? And frankly, they did nothing.
And tell us in this case, putting the expert aside,
yes, sir,
talking on ordinary negligence, what's the injury and what's the cause? What's your evidence on injury and causation?
We know there's mold in the house. We know that mold was from a water source. We know we have an expert from our microbiologist will say that mold will grow in a house. It's in the ductwork. That's where the humidifier was. And that the mold, according to Dr. Johanning, is the cause of these people's injuries, that they're suffering these asthmatic conditions, these resistance to drugs, the chronic sinusitis, essentially.
And this, according to your proof, will have happened within 10 weeks?
That's correct. And frankly, Your Honor, I don't feel capable or competent to comment past that, but I know the experts will tell us that that's what happened to the Campbells in this particular case. The question for the landlord and tenant is what they knew or what they should have known regarding that HVAC system. And we're not saying that the installation was wrong or that it's out of level or that it should have been upgraded. What we're saying is that the mere basic examination of the HVA system, same thing that Mr. Campbell did, which was to crack open the cover and just take a look.
All right. Well, going back to your allegation of common law negligence, you seem to have identified two aspects in your argument today. One, it was not doing periodic maintenance that prevented it from being built up in the first place. They never noticed it because they didn't do these checks. Then second, once they were on notice that there was an accumulation of water, that they should have gone further and checked the ductwork. Is that right? So that would be your common law negligence theories?
In part, that's true, Your Honor. Let me be more specific. The defendants didn't do any inspection of this HVA system. It's not that they did one, didn't do one for a year. Didn't do it at all.
Okay.
When my tenants moved in, my clients moved in, there had been no inspection of the HVA system. It was only after my clients had been exposed to this mold and they began to research and sort out that musty smell that they found the problem with what they believe is the source of the mold in the HVA system.
So your theory would be that when you switch tenants, the landlord has an obligation to see that the unit is habitable before you put the new tenants in, and that was not done in this case, and that the jury doesn't need an expert to tell you that the landlord ought to check the unit before you let people move in.
I believe that to be exactly what I'm arguing to the court, Your Honor. I don't know that there's any standard of care that compels a landlord or a landowner to inspect between tenants. I do believe that there's some reasonable requirement, and the cases seem to support this, some reasonable requirement that some inspection be done.
You need to help us help you.
I understand.
What we're looking for is what your theory of common law negligence is that doesn't need any expert support.
Any person who owns a house in the United States, who lives in a house in the United States, knows they have a heater and they have an air conditioner. And I don't want to sound – well, I will. If I'm sitting in my house in February, and I don't need Einstein to tell me it's cold in my house because my heater's not working. I'm not really interested in what the technology is that makes it work. It's not working. If the owner of that house had inspected the property, just a casual inspection, we wouldn't have to worry about carbon monoxide being in the house. We wouldn't have to worry about being mold in the house. But it doesn't require an expert to say, oh, by the way, you should check your HVA systems on some frequency. You don't need that. I believe all you need is some common sense approach to that. And that's not beyond a jury. A jury can certainly take a look at this and say, this is not complex. If somebody went down and looked at it and they saw it was broken, they could deal with the problem.
Now, when you say the HVA system, are you referring to the humidifier that your client removed?
Well, I can refer to the entire system because it wasn't inspected, but in particular, the humidifying system that was put into the whole house. Yes, sir.
And that's something that your client took care of within a few weeks after moving in.
He removed it. Unfortunately, the smell didn't leave, but our microbiologist will tell us that you have to have a water source. There's a water source in the humidifying system. That'll cause the growth of mold. There's mold in the ductwork. There's no large leap in logic, and frankly, past that, once the mold exists, whether it's dangerous and at what level it's dangerous to individuals is for the doctors and the medical folks to tell us. But simple fact of the matter is that there was no inspection done to this property, period. It seems to me you have three choices. You can lead, you can follow, or you just get out of the way. You can't stand on the sidewalk with your shoulders shrugged and say, I'm not going to do anything. Consequently, I'm not bound by anything that may follow from my inability or my negligence in checking the system.
Well, let me approach it from a slightly different perspective so that I can understand it better. Did you have an expert who was not disqualified, who was going to testify that I studied, you know, the air particles or, you know, took samples or whatever in the house, and I determined that there was this level of mold, which is, you know, dangerous to people's health, and this is what I'm concerned about, and for there to be this level of mold, there had to be standing sources of water, you know, or malfunctioning humidifiers and HVAC systems that had been in that condition for many, many months, if not years, to lead to this level of contamination. Was there somebody going to testify along those lines?
The honest answer is no, Your Honor. What I would have is a gentleman who would testify. He collected samples in the house. They were analyzed, identified penicillium, stachybotrys, and some other.
Right.
Dr. Yang, who's also with P&K Microbiology Services, would be testifying as to the levels of mold in the house and the impact it would have on the human organism. And then, of course, Dr. Johanning. But your question was, were they going to say that it came specifically from a humidifier that had been non-service for a period of years?
No, what I'm getting at is if we take as having been proven for purposes of this discussion that there was mold in the house at a level that was dangerous to people, okay, or that could cause illnesses. In terms of any failure to meet some duty of care, wouldn't you also have to be able to show that this either existed for such an extended period of time that you could infer that there hadn't been adequate care given, or have an expert who says, you know, in order to prevent this kind of problem, landlords really must inspect premises every 6 months or every year or every whatever, you know, and provide that expert standard of care?
I understand the question, Your Honor, and no to does my expert testify to that. And I don't believe they have to. What I believe has to happen is, what does the landlord know and when did they know it, type of a standard. They knew that they had a humidifier in the house. They knew they were providing humidity into the house. And as far back as Rokeby even cites a Nebraska case, and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm into my time, but let me just finish my thought if I might. Cites a Nebraska case which says, well, you know, we're just oblivious to mold. And the court rejects that theory, that in the 90s, now we're in 2000 and beyond, that people know mold's a danger and it's a potential danger in a residential environment as well as commercial environments. You have to inspect your system. That's just reasonable. And that's a question for a jury. That's not a matter of law. That's.
So you're saying that when they finally came on November 29th, that was too late?
I believe so. Absolutely.
And so the issue before the jury would be whether, having been alerted by the tenant sometime in October that there was a mold problem, waiting for 5 weeks before before you inspect or clean out the ducts constitutes negligence.
In part, that's true, Your Honor, but remember, they cleaned the ducts. There wasn't any mold remediation in the house, and my clients remained in that house for a period of weeks after that. Threshold question, I believe,
they
for the...
They did clean the ducts?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They cleaned the ducts?
They cleaned the ducts, yes, sir.
So then you're attributing your client's health problems to everything that preceded the discovery of the humidifier?
I have no reason to think otherwise, Your Honor. Now, in fairness to that question, though, that musty smell, whether it's a moldy smell or whatever that is, I don't know, that remained in the house. And, in fact, it remained in the house until my clients left.
So we just want to make sure we understand the theory of your common law negligence case. And you're not contending there was negligence after the humidifier was discovered. You're saying the negligence was in permitting the humidifier condition to come about.
In the first part, Your Honor, but I do believe that I should be allowed, and I think I would be allowed to argue that negligence continued, because cleaning the ductwork is not a mold abatement. It's a different process.
Okay. Thank you. You've got a little over 2 minutes.
I'd like to reserve that if I might, Your Honor. May I step from the podium?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Casarino, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I believe Mr. McDonald misspoke. To our knowledge, there is no evidence in this case that there was any mold in the ductwork system. We've never received an expert report on causation at all. I believe the expert that we did receive talked about there being levels of mold in the air in the house, but nothing, to my knowledge, in the HVAC system. And that's the problem with the case. Mr. Campbell smelled something and assumed that it was coming. It was a musty smell. He assumed it was coming from the heating system. He tore the humidifier out. He took it out, said it was malfunctioning. That did not correct the problem. He continued to have this musty smell after he took out the humidifier. He then contacted Patterson Schwartz, not Mrs. DeSabatino, and Patterson Schwartz had the ductwork cleaned. That didn't correct the problem. The musty smell still was in the house. As a matter of fact, there is no evidence that there is mold in this house. No one has ever seen active mold in the house. No one has ever seen any evidence of active mold in the house. And no one has seen any evidence that there was active mold in the house before the lease. So the question is, what is the obligation of the landlord who doesn't know about any active mold? We don't even know that it came from the humidifier. The humidifier, of course, pumps humidity into the system. It was broken and wasn't working. If it wasn't working, we don't know what effect that had on putting humidity in the house. These are the things that we need an expert to tell us. I think an expert has to come forward in this case and give us the cause of the mold, if in fact there is mold that's being caused by some condition of the house, so that the landlord knows what his duty is. If the expert had said, yes, this heating system, the malfunctioning humidifier, is what caused mold in this house, if that was the case, and we don't have it, then I think we need someone to come forward and say the landlord has a duty in general to make sure that you go into a humidifier, take it apart to make sure that it's working properly.
Well, there's some, and the evidence in the record's a little confusing, but there seems to be a suggestion that after Mr. McDonald's tenant clients vacated that and took their furniture, that the smell went away. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. The record is by the agent of Patterson Schwartz that after the plaintiffs left the property, she was in there and she noticed the musty smell. They then noticed that when the furniture was removed after that, that the smell went away.
So is there any evidence in the record that there was testing before and after the tenants vacated? We have Mr. McDonald saying, well, somebody tested the level of mold in the air, putting aside the source, and it was X. And then the furniture was removed. Did your clients do anything to say, well, you know, maybe it's okay? Is there any evidence of any testing?
To be frank with you, I don't recall. I don't even recall when the testing was done. Maybe Mr. Hill knows that. But what I know is that Mrs. DeSabatino said we never had a problem there with mold the entire years that she owned it. We've deposed the tenants that had it before the plaintiffs, who both said there was never any musty smell in the house when they were in there, nor was there any mold. And what's important about those tenants is that one of them was a medical doctor, and his wife was asthmatic, and she said, I never had a problem in there. So we know that there was no problem. They just moved out, I think, a month before the plaintiffs moved
in.
Well,
all of those facts would perhaps mean that you might prevail in front of a jury, because you might be able to establish that there was nothing that you did that was below the standard of reasonableness in caring for, providing a habitable place to live. But I don't know that any of that matters for purposes of the summary judgment motion. And I think you started out saying something that was inconsistent with what opposing counsel said. I thought opposing counsel said that they did have an expert who was going to testify that there was a dangerous or, a toxic whatever level of mold in the air in this house, and that it was attributable to standing water.
Well, as I said, that's not part of this record. I don't recall that being an expert that ever said that.
Let's assume for the moment that we have an expert who's going to say, this house had mold in it. I tested the air and all and determined that there was mold in it and that it was of a type that could cause infirmities to humans. I also determined, based upon the kind of mold it was, that it was mold that had grown on standing water in the home. And you add to that expert testimony the tenant's testimony that I found this humidifier with standing water in it and blocked, by ice or whatever, it wasn't working. Now, if there were that kind of expert testimony on the existence of mold and testimony as to a location that would meet the description of what the expert said is where this mold came from, wouldn't that be enough to allow a jury to decide whether a landlord who rents a house that has a non-functioning humidifier in it and that has this level of mold in it has not met ordinary standard of care of providing a habitable place to rent?
Your Honor, you're making a lot of assumptions. But let's
assume
this is true for a moment. We still don't know what standing water caused the mold. No one has said this is the standing water that's in the furnace. It could have been standing water that was put there by the plaintiff, so far as we know. That's the problem with the case. There has to be a connection as to what is causing the mold and what the landlord should have done about it. if the heater was malfunctioning at the time and it caused mold, an expert should say that. And that's not in the record in this case. There's nothing in this case to suggest that. If mold, we know mold can be caused in damp areas. There's no doubt about it. But there's no indication as to how it got damp or what caused that dampness. We don't know when that dehumidifier broke.
Well, aren't you blending together this, the duty of the landlord and the issue of causation? I
mean, yes, because I think you have to. Because until we know what the cause is, how can we know what the duty is? And that's been our problem. If we don't know where the mold came from, how do we know what the duty of the landlord is?
Right. Tell us the rule that you're advocating. Because earlier you were talking about there was no active mold in the house. So we can all imagine hypotheticals where you go into a house and you see something that's moldy, or you see a baseboard that's moldy, and we can contrast that with a situation where you just have a smell and you test the air and the level of the mold's really high. Are you asking us to adopt the rule that says whenever you're attributing a problem of mold to the landlord, you always need an expert?
I don't think you always need an expert. I would think if the landlord knew of a problem, you don't have to have an expert. But when you have a case like this where there's no knowledge, I mean, that's clear from the record, of a problem, we have to know what's causing the problem and what the duties of the landlord are. Because if this problem is coming from the humidifier, and we don't know that it is, but assume that it is, what is the duty of the landlord with regard to that humidifier? Does the landlord have a duty to take it apart and look in it to make sure it's working properly? If so, someone should say that. The jury shouldn't be speculating as to what that duty is.
Well, let's suppose that hypothetically, the only evidence we have is a smell, an unidentified source, and the level of mold in the house is too high. Does the landlord have an obligation to figure it out and get the level of air down to something that's not high?
I would think not. How would the landlord have any obligation unless there's notice?
No, I'm assuming they do have notice. You call the landlord up. You say, I don't know where it's coming from, but we've got a bad smell, and we've had the air tested, and it's the level of mold in the air is too high. Once that's drawn to the landlord's attention, then does the landlord have to respond?
Well, certainly, but that's not quite the fact.
I mean, I understand. My question really is, what is the rule that you're asking us to announce in this case?
The rule, I believe, is the one that was announced by the Superior Court, that to show causation in a mold case, you need an expert to identify the standard of care of the landlord with regard to the cause of the mold. So you got to find out the cause of the mold, why is it there, and what should the landlord have done about it at the time. And I think that's pretty clear. I mean, that's what all the other cases seem to say. Otherwise, it's pure speculation. I see that my time is up.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Carl Hill, Seitzman, Hogtrapping Green, on behalf of the defendant, Patterson Schwartz. May it please the Court. Your Honor, I don't want to echo, but I do essentially adopt the arguments that Mr. Casarino is making as to the need for an expert. Obviously, the record reflects that it was my motion to exclude Mr. Lynn as an expert that ultimately was the one of the linchpins for the granting of summary judgment in favor of both defendants.
Well, help us focus on that. As I was asking Mr. Casarino, you need an expert when? Let's suppose we take the extreme case, which I know is not your case, but we see mold, we see water, we smell it in the air, and there's a clearly identifiable source that anybody could fix, including the landlord. Would you need an expert in that case?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think the hypothetical that you've given is similar to the Stroop case, and that's the 2001 opinion by this court. And in that case, you'll recall that the tenant there, who lived in the apartments for about 21 months, complained to the landlord many times about a black hole in the shower, a hole that was leaking water that had what she thought to be black mold on it. Ultimately, that while taking a shower, the ceiling above her collapsed, and to no one's surprise, the drywall and the debris that crashed upon Ms. Stroot was full of multicolor mold, including black mold. That's clearly reflected in that opinion that went through a jury trial on a substantial verdict from Ms. Stroot. That's a case, by the way, that Mr. Lynn testified at trial, the same expert that Mr. McDonald proffered but never gave us an opinion on. Mr. Lynn testified that the landlord in that case breached the standards relating to maintenance of a apartment, if you will. I don't think there should be no real distinction between commercial and residential. I don't believe counsel for plaintiff advocated that today. I think the point of the matter is, as I read the cases, is that mold is a tricky issue, and it's a complex issue. And what Judge Stokes did in Rokeby,
that's the Brandt case?
That's Charlie Brandt, a lawyer in Wilmington who has an office right on the Brandywine.
That was a commercial complex.
It was a commercial complex, but as I understand the facts of that case through, there are multiple opinions by Judge Stokes, that case has not gone to trial yet. In that case, the ceiling tiles started to reflect black or wetness, and it was those ceiling tiles in Mr. Brandt's office that triggered a review of a heat pump that was dedicated to his space. Again, I think the commercial residential is really, really not relevant for purposes of this proceeding. But in connection with the heat pump above his unit, they noticed that the way the drip lines had been installed in a cantilevered fashion, that was somehow dropping water onto these ceiling tiles, and that there was no dispute that the source of the mold came from that heat pump. And the other cases as well, and we've talked about Stroot and the debris that fell from the shower. There's the Atwell case, which is another mold case, and I'll limit my comments to the four mold cases that we've all cited to, Your Honors. In the Atwell case, there was an allegation that the seller failed to disclose information about water moisture. And in that case, the plaintiff had three experts identified by name in the opinion that said that the source of the water moisture was beneath the heater itself. And the reason I say that is the plaintiff, in his reply brief, seems to suggest, citing that case for the first time, and that's the Atwell case, that the court didn't address the issue of experts. The fact of the matter is the plaintiff had three experts, and the defendant, again, the issues there were consumer fraud and the knowledge of the seller in connection with the sale. The seller himself said, how could I have known about this? So therefore, there's no consumer fraud claim or fraud claim for failure to disclose. So there were experts in that case. And finally, in the Duncan case, which is a Judge Graves opinion, that case involved a plaintiff who alleged exposure to carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and mold in connection with a modular home. And she alleged the claim against the builder-seller, which was Newton, and the home inspection company. And in connection with, I'm sorry, the home inspection company was with Atwell. The claim against in Duncan versus Newton was against the seller of the modular home for failure to properly grade the surrounding properties so that water improperly got into the crawl space, and against the company that installed the heater in that particular unit. And again, this is in Duncan, and that somehow he was negligent in connection with allowing a condensate pipe to drip into the sandy soil beneath the crawl. And in that case, Judge Graves was clear, consistent with all the mold cases, that an expert was required to define what the defendant did wrong. And before I close, I'd like to sharpen.
Well,
yes, ma'am.
Let me stop you there. If we have a situation where there is mold and there was a humidifier that had standing water in it and that wasn't working, and the landowner or the landlord hadn't done anything to provide a working humidifier when they moved in. Why do you need an expert to say, oh, and the mold came from this humidifier and no place else?
I think, and I hearken back, Your Honor, to the fact that mold, I believe, is a tricky issue since it's airborne only in this case and there was no outward manifestation of mold, that an expert would have to tie that water and the production of that water through the system to create a dangerous level of mold. I'm breathing mold right now as I stand here, so are all of we. When I walk outside, the concentrations are even higher of mold that I'm breathing.
Is that undisputed in this case that the only mold was invisible airborne mold?
There is no dispute on that, Your Honor. And one thing I just want to make sure that's clear on this is that there has been no expert. It's clearly not before you on the record before you. There is no expert that has linked the water from the humidifier to the high concentrations of airborne mold. And to get back to Justice Holland's question, the record reflects, and I attached it as number 43 and 44 of my appendix, that's PSA 43 and 44. 43 is the ductwork cleaning by ServPro, professionally done to clean all the ductwork. That was after Mr. Campbell had physically unscrewed the humidifier, taken it off, and left a cardboard piece in the hole in the ductwork where the humidifier was. And 44 is a invoice from Glazer Brothers that was hired by Patterson Schwartz on behalf of Mrs. DeSabatino, the owner, where Glazer Brothers searched for fungus or mold within the duct system and in the air, and that is before Your Honors is number 44, and Glazer Brothers found no evidence of fungus or mold in the ductwork in or near or any parts of the ductwork within that particular property. So that brings us back to the point of it's a mystery as to where this smell came from, and I emphasize smell because, again, the Campbells have testified that they didn't have any, they didn't smell anything when they visited the property three times before they took possession, and it was only 2 weeks after their belongings are moved out of storage that they start having this smell, and that after he removed the humidifier, after all the ductwork was cleaned on November 29, 2000, that the smell persisted and they vacated the premises in December of 2000.
But you're saying the record reflects when the ductwork was cleaned, it was checked, and there's a report that says no mold in the ductwork.
Correct, and that was done on January 12th of 2001, and that's it's PSA 44 on the record. That's the Glazer Brothers invoices. There's two pages, 44 and 45. I need to sum up now. I believe all the cases, and Rokeby seems to be the closest one to the facts here, and it was clearly stated, and the rationale is clear, that mold's tricky. The fact that there's mold in the air is not conclusive, and that an expert is required to tell my client where it went wrong in connection with the maintenance of this property.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hill is correct. There are three cases, Brandt, Atwell, and Duncan. All three require an expert to tell us what the land or the property manager should have done. But interestingly enough, all three cases allege defective installation of the air conditioning unit, the placement of the air conditioning unit, work that had been done by professionals, and that makes sense. I think you need to have an expert to say this professional, whatever they did, was wrong or they should have done something different. That follows back to what the court tells us in Norfleet.
But do you agree with Mr. Hills that the record reflects that after your client called the humidifier to the attention of the landlord, the ductwork was cleaned and checked and there was no evidence of mold?
I have a problem with that particular part of the statement. I can read the report again, but I'm not sure how Glazer Brothers can clean the ductwork and say there's no mold without some kind of laboratory testing. Write it down.
Yeah, but did they say that? That's what their report says. If I read 43, 44, and 45, and that's in their report.
Your Honor, I'll accept that. I can't remember as I stand here before you, but if Mr. Hill says that's what it says, that's fine. I'll accept it.
Thank you.
All right, and let me just get one other factual point clarified. Were any of your experts going to say that, in my expert opinion, having been told what the humidifier looked like and what condition it was in, it is my opinion that that was the source of the mold?
Your Honor, there's no report that says that specifically. I anticipate that's exactly what P&K Microbiology Labs will say. It says that that mold can only grow where there's the presence of water or humidity. The only source of water that we could tell was in that humidifier. And counsel's right, there weren't any large growths of mold on the wall like you would have in the Strott case where the ceiling finally fell down. But that really raises the question is, what did that landlord in this particular case know and when they should have known it? And again, you can't say, I'm not going to look for a problem. I'm not going to examine my problem, even though I have a duty to make sure I have a healthy rental unit. I'll just stand on the sidewalk until something happens. Thank you.
So specifically, you agree that this is a case of invisible airborne mold?
I believe it's all airborne, yes, Your Honor.
Invisible airborne mold?
Invisible, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Mayor, retire from the podium.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. The court appreciates your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.